Hey everyone, welcome to The Geek Awakens Presents Traveling the Universe. I'm Mitch, and joining me again is Matt.
How's it going?
So, we're going to spend the next half hour or so nerding out on the newest episode of Doctor Who. So if you have not seen The Ghost Monument yet, hit pause on this podcast, watch the episode, and then get back to us. So, let's go ahead, start it off with just our general spoiler-ish free review of The Ghost Monument on a scale of 1 to 5 sonic screwdrivers. I'll let you start, Matt.
I am going to go with 3 on this one. It had some really great moments. It had some, for me, some kind of meh moments. So I'm going to go pretty much down the middle.
Okay.
3.
Stick with 4. I gave the last episode a 4. I'm giving this one a 4 as well. I did think that The Woman Who Fell to Earth was slightly better, but The Ghost Monument was really awesome in other ways, so in my opinion, it kind of justifies keeping that rating. So,
okay.
So that said, this is your last chance. If you have not seen the episode and you keep listening, you're going to get spoiled. So it's your own fault. Just saying. So, and I do want to preface this. Last week, I did take more notes than I took for this week. So I apologize for not being as prepared. But if you're listening to this and you know me, then you really shouldn't be surprised. So that said. All right. So we ended off the last episode with the Doctor and her companions / friends. I still don't like the use of the new term friends. I don't know. I'm weird. but them floating in space. And immediately we see that they get picked up. At first we think that they got picked up by just one person. But turns out that Ryan and Graham get split up from the Doctor and Yaz, and so the Doctor and Yaz end up with Epzo, and the other two end up with Engstrom, who are kind of in this, at the time we don't know what's going on, but it turns out they're in this race to get a ton of money and to get home, basically. So, the lead up to this, okay, so for me, like, that whole part was really cool. And everything, like, once they started on the race, I loved again. But, like, from the moment they hit the planet to when they were in the tent with the dude, like, I'm not gonna lie, it kind of lost me a little bit. Granted, I had just gotten home from work. I had made, you know, myself a quick dinner and everything, so I was kind of still unwinding. But I found myself playing with my phone for a couple of minutes. And I don't know, like I said, that part was just a little boring for me. But what were your thoughts on all that?
Essentially the race kind of sort of lost me. Like the planet, like I appreciated what was going on, but I don't know. Even like the part on the boat was cool. I liked that and how the conversation evolved there. I don't know. I just think that there were bigger chunks, like, as they got to Ilan and his, was it hologram?
Right.
I don't know. There really wasn't much between the end of the race and the end of the episode, but I don't know. I was not just a huge fan of how that all kind of came together and played out. I guess I would have felt better with like a monster of the week kind of situation to deal with as they search for the TARDIS instead of this race.
Yeah. And they kind of had, you know, that monster of the week aspect to it. I mean, you had the robot snipers, and then you also had the ribbon thing or whatever that was, like trying to suffocate Epzo, and then,
right.
Which, I was going to talk about this a little bit later, but, you know, since we're kind of already on that subject, I thought that those, the ribbon things were, like, were really cool. And what they said, I mean, they, you know, the they said that, talked about a timeless child. So, what does that mean?
That was the part that really struck me as interesting. And I feel like that line in particular goes back to what I picked up on last week when she was getting ready to pick out clothes. That she said she hasn't done this in a long time. And it made me wonder, it still continues to make me think that there's more mythology and more lore to Doctor Who than we have ever been privy to before. And that we're going to get some of that as this season continues.
I saw some chatter online, because that was one of the first things I did after I watched the episode. You know, kind of went to see what other people were thinking about it, and you know, it was kind of, this episode was kind of split from what I saw. Like, people either really enjoyed it or they hated it. What a lot of people that I saw were seeing were saying was that the timeless child, and this is probably more of a pipe dream than anything, but may lead back to all the way back to the first Doctor and his granddaughter Susan. So could we possibly see her again?
Okay. Well, I mean, we have revisited other Doctors in Christmas specials. So maybe that's where this is going.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely interested to figure that out. I feel like that kind of, you know, is leading into more of a series arc that we might be getting. You know, this might be this season's Bad Wolf, or, you know, Crack in the Universe, or what have you.
True.
Another thing that... go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, I'm definitely okay with that. You know, as much as, like, I really enjoy the Monster of the Week, I do like a little bit of that overarching tie together.
Yeah. I just hope that it has a better payoff, if this does end up being, you know, this season's arc. I hope it has a better payoff than the hybrid from Clara's last season.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they set that up to be something fantastic, and it was just like, you guys are too, you know, too much of besties, so, you know, like, no. Give me something. But anyway. But yeah, so a timeless child may be an arc, but they also, even though we didn't see them, the Stenza's kind of showed back up. They made their presence felt. So this may be, like, the Stenza warriors may be our, like, big bad for this season.
Could be.
Which I'd be okay with. I think that Tim Shaw, with, you know, for all of his faults, I think that he may be a weak link in, you know, among the Stenza, so that what we may see later on in the season is going to be a drop in the bucket, or he's going to be a drop in the bucket to the destruction or whatever that they could cause.
Yes. I would have to agree.
So, let's go ahead and kind of shoot back a little bit to the other supporting guest cast among Epso, Angstrom, and what is the guy in the tent's name again?
Ilin.
It goes
Ilin.
Oh. So let's go ahead and talk about them for a minute. Starting with Epso and Angstrom, what did you think of their, you know, dynamic and how they, their reasons for playing the game, or, and, you know, what else?
I enjoyed learning their motivations. And this is really bad, like, even though I watched the episode, like, right now, like, I could kind of tell you what Angstrom was the girl, correct?
Yes.
Female?
Yes.
Okay. I could kind of give you a better idea of hers than of his. But in general, he still made the stronger impression, in particular just because of that story about his mom.
Yeah.
And the tree. Which is kind of weird. Like, that's the way, that's what I remember from the episode. So.
Which, and this is something that, you know, it's not something that I thought of while I was watching the episode, but something that I kind of came across later. But with episode, like, and that story with the mom. I mean, yeah, heartbreaking. But at the same time, I mean, like, we kind of saw how he was, you know, do basically whatever to win. I mean, hell, even towards, no, it was with the boat, wasn't it, when he almost killed Engstrom, had the gun pointed toward
him?
Yeah,
I hit her at gunpoint, yeah. And the doctor came and told him not to.
So would it be outside the realm of possibility for him to have just made that story up just to kind of get more sympathy for him to make it easier for him to win later on?
Oh, absolutely. I think he was definitely the type of character that could have done that. I would just think that, and I know that, you know, it's an actor portraying a character, etc., but mm-hmm. the look on his face as he told that story led me to think of the truth behind it, not that it was just for, you know, for gain in the race.
Okay, that's fair. but yeah, I mean, like, and I agree with you, like, really, as far as the stories that I remember, like, I remember Engstrom's backstory and how, you know, she was basically doing this to save her family, you know, to use that money to save her family. But I don't really remember Epzo's true motivation for this other than just, you know, just to win.
Right.
But yeah. And then going back to Illyn a little bit, I don't know. For the little bit of that character that we saw, I would like to see more of him. And I don't know that this story lends itself for him to come back, but I would like to see more of him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we will or not. I feel like because he was a hologram, and he is elsewhere, it just might be something that happens.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be really cool to see. And even for, you know, for the doctor and for Illyn to, you know, kind of meet face to face and not, you know, through a hologram.
Right.
So, and we're just kind of jumping all over the place, but yeah, that's all right. So what did you think with the whole scene when they're hiding from the sniper robots and Ryan is basically like, oh, hey, here's this gun. I'm going to go all Call of Duty.
It was very entertaining because that is, it's so anti-doctor, which is what she made the point about. Like, you know, she says she doesn't use guns, you know, and he's like, oh, I'm going to try this anyways because I'm going to be big and bad and protect everybody. And then it backfired.
Hardcore.
And she's like, yeah, now you just made him mad.
But yeah, so like, but it was good to see that, you know, to see a character, and we saw it a couple times in this episode where, you know, they don't completely 100% trust the doctor at this point. I think at the end of the episode, I think that they do, but you're still kind of seeing that doubt and that, oh, well, what do you know? I can, you know, I know what I'm doing. I can take care of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But kind of keeping with Ryan, let's go ahead and talk about his scene with Graham on the boat and how he's still not into Graham, like, at all.
No, he's really not. But you definitely, at least from my perspective, I saw Graham at least trying to kind of bridge that in that scene.
Right. And really, Graham's been trying to bridge that gap and to connect to him, you know, basically even since the first moment that we saw Graham, you know. First time we saw him was him trying to help Ryan learn how to ride a bike, you know. I really, and this was something else that somebody speculated about online, and it's completely within the realm of Doctor Who to do this, that it's going to take up until, like, Graham, like, dying or getting killed or whatever for Ryan to finally call him Granddad. That's what's going to happen, right?
Yes. Yes, which is very, very typical Who, but yeah.
Which, you know, would kind of upset me at because at this point, two episodes in, I think Graham might be my favorite companion. I really like him. Except for the fact that he calls the Doctor Doc.
Right. He did.
Which that may grow on me. Yeah, exactly. It may grow on me, but it caught me off guard at first. But yeah, so far he's my favorite. Which kind of leads us to the last companion that we've got going on right now. I feel like this was another episode where Yaz kind of was more in the background.
I would have to agree. Yeah, we are yet another episode where we don't see a whole lot of her action, more just following.
Right. And I want to like her. I want to like all three of these, and you know, of these companions. And for the most part, I do. But with Yaz, like, I need more from her. I need to... And this is nothing against, you know, the actress playing the character at all.
Oh,
but,
no.
But I need to see, you know, her take the spotlight, you know?
We need some aspect of her character to grab us and say, this is why we should care.
Exactly. So, let's, before we talk about the end of the episode, I want to shoot back to the very beginning, because this was our first chance to actually see the opening theme and, you know, hear the music and all that kind of stuff. I loved it.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. You know, to hear those drums, like, in the foreground, you know, was just like, oh, man, it got me pumped, you know? Like, even to the point where, after the episode, I had to look up the video on YouTube just to watch it a couple more times.
Yeah, I enjoyed that kind of the electronic element to it, just for the fact that those are typical in songs that are remixed.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of ways, I kind of feel like this season is a remix of Doctor Who. Like, you're taking what you know and love and just changing it, you know, turning it on its side a little bit, so.
Right. Yeah, changing it enough, but yet still keeping that essence of it, you know?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
But yeah, so kind of jumping back, going towards the end of the episode, I kind of forgot to point out one of the big plot points, you know, one of the main reason that the Doctor and her companions even continued on with this trek was because the ghost monument was none other than her TARDIS. Which I got really excited to see, especially after what you told me on the last episode, because I went out and I found, you know, that article, or at least a similar article. I don't know if there were other people with that same theory. And it got me worried all week long. It's like, oh my God, I can't go a whole season without the TARDIS. But,
right, yeah.
But we get to the end, and before we hit that point, there's one other thing that I want to point out. The end of the race with Epso and Angstrom, how did you feel about them just kind of like out of the blue being like, yeah, let's just be co-winners?
It was kind of awkward. Excuse me. And I think, again, that was part of reason why I gave this whole episode three sonic screwdrivers, because their characters, the race, you know, that all of a sudden it's like, well, let's just go ahead and do this because the Doctor says it's a good idea. Which, granted, 99 times out of 100, if the doctor says it's a good idea, it is a good idea, or at least it works out to be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But they, as little information and experience they had with her to just jump on board with that seemed out of character.
Yeah. I feel like it may have been a little bit in character for Angstrom, but definitely not for Epso. He was very much a, you know, I'm by myself, you know, whatever. But yeah, so I was more shocked to see him be on board with it. But you know, all's well that ends well for those two. And they get transported off the planet, leaving the Doctor and her companions. And there is no TARDIS at the end of the race, like there should have been. And at this point, the Doctor has kind of given up hope, which it's not entirely out of character for the Doctor, but a little bit out of character for the Doctor.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. But they, you know, everybody else is like, no, we're, you know, like, we're staying, you know, we're staying by your side. It's fine, you know, whatever. And then it's Yaz, of all people, who hears it first. And then... And then we see it. We see the TARDIS kind of flickering in and out of, you know, of that time. Which leads me to probably my favorite line of the episode. Come to daddy, mommy.
That was fantastic.
That was wonderful. Which still kind of, you know, it still shows that, you know, the Doctor... You know, even though she's done regenerating, is still learning more about her new self, you know?
Which I think, for me, is the reason why the... her giving up doesn't bother me as much. Because every other doctor has had their TARDIS at regeneration.
True.
We've had to go a little ways before she gets the TARDIS back. And there's so many ways where the TARDIS and the Doctor are one.
Mm-hmm.
So without the TARDIS, I could see her almost at that point, you know, to that point of giving up. Because without the TARDIS, I mean, she's the Doctor, but how much is she the Doctor without the TARDIS?
True. Valid point. So let's go ahead and talk about the TARDIS in general. What do you think about it?
I love it. I think it's awesome. The only thing I don't really care for, and this is a bizarre aesthetic choice, the most exterior walls.
Oh, I love those.
Like those circle, the three-legged circle thing. I don't know exactly what they would be called.
They're the round things, but redecorated.
Yeah, they are the round thing redecorated, which... yes, that was a great line, too. Yeah, that's probably my one thing. I'm like, I'm not a huge fan of those, but I don't know. I love the yellow orange glow. It matches the regeneration energy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The rest of it is just, it's hard to put into words exactly how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just so different.
Yeah.
Than even the last couple.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of 9 and 10s. Kind of more of a cleaned up version of 9 and 10s, but yeah, like I was really worried going into it because I loved 12's TARDIS so much and I didn't want that to go away. So between not wanting 12's TARDIS to go away and also I don't know if you saw any of like the leaked photos of what the TARDIS might end up looking like a few months back, but like I was not on board with that. And it's still, and it is like that a little bit, but I think being able to see the final product looks phenomenal. You know, I love the hourglasses on the console, you know, the spinning mini TARDIS on there.
Oh, that was phenomenal.
Yeah. The fact that it gives the doctor a cookie, you know, just makes my day. Which
I had seen an image online of some cookies in regards to Doctor Who, and I had not yet seen the episode when I saw that image. I'm like, what is this all about? So when it spit out the cookie, I just started laughing. I'm like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I loved that. And I was watching like kind of a behind the scenes thing of the making of the TARDIS this morning, and they were even talking about how, I think it was the set designer or whatever, asked Jodie Whittaker, you know, without any context, but they asked her what her favorite, you know, cookie, or I guess over there, biscuit is, you know, and she told them, and that's what that is. So, but yeah, I think they did a fantastic job with the TARDIS. And yeah, I can't wait to see more scenes and for, you know, the companions to, you know, kind of explore it a little bit more. Especially when Ryan asked, like, ooh, can I touch that? And the doctor was like, no.
Yeah. No, don't you remember the last time you touched something? It didn't turn out so well.
Right. So, looking ahead, just to kind of, you know, well, before we look ahead to the next episode, was there anything else about the Ghost Monument that I missed or that you wanted to touch on?
No, not that I can think of. I mean, obviously the big thing was the TARDIS at the end. So no, I think that's pretty much all that stood out to me.
All right. Awesome. So with that said, looking ahead to the next episode, the next episode is the Rosa Parks episode, entitled Rosa. There's been some chatter ever since that there was, you know, the speculation that this particular episode was going to be about Rosa Parks. You know, there was some chatter online, and people are, at the time at least, were apprehensive, you know, like, you know, this is going to have to be done, especially in today's culture and, you know, everything that's going on in the world. This episode is going to have to be done perfectly, you know.
But just
going off of the preview, I mean, what do you think?
I somehow missed the preview on it, so I did not.
Oh.
I don't know if, yeah. I will have to go back and see.
Yeah. We don't see a whole lot of Rosa Parks herself. In fact, you know, in the preview, she only speaks one time. I think she says something like, you know, who are you or whatever. But when the name of when the episode is named after you, you're probably going to have a bigger part than that. But basically it kind of boils down to, there's some kind of, you know, I'm at least humanoid baddie doing something in that time frame. And, you know, like the doctor is saying how we need to make sure to preserve the timeline and all this and that. I don't know. I'm excited for it. I love kind of, you know, the history-ish episodes as opposed to, you know, the far-flung sci-fi, you know, just because those are the episodes that we get a lot, you know, and that's nothing against that. But we don't get to see, I say grounded, but grounded is not really something that happens in Doctor Who. But, you know, this is going to be more of a grounded episode, I feel like. And I like those just because it's a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm excited for it. I do still worry a little bit because, like I said, I mean, this is there's going to be no room for error on this one. But yeah, I think especially after these first two episodes, I am less worried. You know.
Yeah, I think we've already seen just from these first two episodes, you know, either you know strong points or weak points, etc. That the Doctor is in good hands with Chibnall.
100%
for the series for this season.
100% You know, there are still you know people online worried about you know oh well, he's not Stephen Moffat oh he's not you know but that's fine he shouldn't be
right
you know.
Exactly.
So, but yeah. So, with that said, that's all the time that we have for this episode of Traveling the Hooniverse. We'll be back later this week for our regular show, and we'll be back next week to cover Rosa. In the meantime, check us out on Facebook and Twitter, where we'll be posting news throughout the week. While you're there, give us some feedback and tell us what cool stuff we're missing out on. Also, be sure to listen to 217radio.com for the best music of yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll be back next week, and we'll see you later.